speaker, Oliver G. from Pleasant Hill.
Yes. Yay. Yay. Awesome. Thank you, Keith. Yay. Oh, look at that. I got fans. Okay. My name is Oliver G., and I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Welcome to the newcomers, and happy birthday to the birthday people. You are in the right spot. When I was new, I didn't think I was in the right spot. And so I always like to tell people, you're in the right spot. You don't have to look for the door. You need to stay here. And welcome, because we want you here. When I was new, I just never had that feeling that it was right, and until it became right, until it became a good idea to stick around. And so my sobriety birth date is February 10th, 1994. My home group is the Sunday Night 12 Steppers in Walnut Creek, and I know how to make coffee. So that's everything I know about AA in a nutshell. The rest of my experience, strength, and or hope, I suggest you take what you like, leave the rest. And you need to know from the beginning, I'm not one of those people who's easily offended. If you want to take notes while I'm talking, please feel free to do so. Now, if you want me to sign those notes when I'm done talking, just discreetly approach me after the meeting. Sometimes people throw signature cards for me in a basket as it moves around the room. I'm very flattered. They like to show it to judges and other people in positions of authority. And it's kind of cool. I was one of those signature collectors when I got here. So if you're one of those, you're definitely in the right spot. And we will definitely sign that and show it off, show it proudly, because people need to see it. Now, I love that this meeting is being hosted by the Wednesday night men's meeting, because that was my old home group years ago, back in when I, and I, spoiler alert, back when I got out of the military, I moved up here to, back to Northern California, and I was attending the Wednesday night 12 and 12 men's meeting. We were meeting initially at the senior center downtown, and then we met in JJ's house down in the basement, because you could smoke during the meeting there, and JJ really liked that. And now, at this meeting, JJ would frequently MC it. And what he would ask initially is there anybody here in their first 30 days of sobriety? Then he always liked to ask, is there anybody here in their last 30 days of sobriety? And it's an ooh-ah moment. It makes you think. It's like, oh, okay, who knows? Who in here may be next? But it doesn't have to be your last 30 days of sobriety. You can stick around as long as you like. In fact, some of the things that I learned early on in AA is that they will not kick you out of here, no matter what you do. And we try to do some stuff. And one of my early meetings down in Southern California, this guy, he pulled out a knife. And he went at the secretary. And I'm like, oh my gosh. They didn't call the police for some reason. And the next night, this guy shows up. I'm like, whoa, what are we doing here? Shouldn't he be like outside somewhere, not coming back to the meeting? They're like, oh no, he's sober tonight. And I'm like, we give a little leeway, a little grace to those who are drunk and showing up in the meeting. So if you're doing that, please, no need to attack with knives, but words can hurt just as much. So go for that, and it's fine. But we can take it. And I remember people would say, "My God, somebody's drunk showing up to the meeting." It's like what we do around here. It's Alcoholics Anonymous. We show up to these meetings. If you get here sober, you might have got here a little bit too early. You should get here drunk. It's really a better experience. We're much more entertaining, and you'll like chatting with a lot of us. So hang out. If you're one of those who is drunk tonight, welcome. You may find this rather amusing, everything that I'm going to say. And if you don't, you come back again. Somebody will be more entertaining maybe next month. Huh? Hey, Don? Now, there's a few things that you're going to learn, too, here in Alcoholics Anonymous when you're new in these things. Oh, I forgot. I was going to set my timer because I tend to talk, like, way too long. So hold on. Bear with me. Yay. Look at that. Noah. Eventually, I'll stop talking. And I was talking to my friend Matt. I'm like, God, how long do I talk? He's like, well, as long as you want. I'm like, yes. And I know that it's my two-hour dissertation on my sobriety, so you guys are in for a treat. And somebody new is like, 2 hours? Are you really going to talk for 2 hours? Possibly, but maybe not here at the meeting. I will definitely talk for 2 hours. Yeah, it'll just keep going on and on and on. Now, when I was new, there were people in the meetings. They would tell me that I had to find, God, that I had to have a home group. I had to have a sponsor. I had to do this, this, and this. Otherwise, I was definitely going to get drunk. And what I found is that none of that's true. AA doesn't demand that you believe anything. So if you're new and you have issues with God, if I'm your God, hey, that's cool. But if you have issues with God, that's fine. We do not demand that you believe anything. We just want you to be here. And we want you to have a shot at sobriety because that's what it takes around here. Now, there's going to be people who find everything funny. There's going to be people who are sad and depressed all the time. There's going to be people who repeat themselves in every single meeting and be like, oh, is he going to say that again? Yeah, he's going to say that again. And they do say that again. And that's the joy of showing up around here. You get to see these things, the intricacies, and you get to know people. I wasn't looking to know people when I got here to Alcoholics Anonymous, but once I started meeting people and hanging out, I had a reason to stick around. Now, you're going to hear people talk about getting commitments. You got to get a commitment. Service is going to keep you sober. It does. But when you're new, it's like, what the hell does that even mean? And it means that you're showing up to the same place over and over again. You're helping out in the meetings, making sure that somebody showing up at the meetings is going to have that same shot of sobriety that you got when you showed up too. And that's what I love about this thing. Now, my home group, that Wednesday night meeting, I got into service there. I became a GSR thanks to anytime I'm here at this meeting, it's old home week. And so my buddy Mark decided to not be a GSR anymore, and I got to take over. He doesn't even remember this. We talked about this before, but I got to take over it the old-fashioned way because he gave it up. And I love that. I love that when I come to meetings that I know people that I've known people for decades, and it's cool. Because like my buddy Bill, I bumped into him, Barnacle Bill, and he was way younger back then, and he had hair, and that's awesome, and he's gonna say the same about me, but that's fine. I'm the one with the microphone, so I get to do this stuff. All right, so that is kind of my brief introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous and me. So let me tell you a little bit about myself. I was born at a very young age, and that screwed me up from the get-go. I blame that one completely on my parents, and my sponsor assures me that I can. That one is completely their fault. I've since participated in doing that, creating that problem for three other individuals, and we're saving them seats, so it's good. Now, I grew up in a small town in West Texas, Andrews, Texas. Anyone? It's a small town in Texas where the men were men and the women, well, they were men too. So it was a bit awkward growing up, and I found alcohol at a fairly young age, 10 years old. And some meetings that makes me an old timer, others a youngster. Please judge me accordingly. I shall reciprocate. Now, and you need to know I'm one of those people who I'm a firm believer in judging. And I know there's others out there that it's a judgment-free zone. It is. Kind of, but now if I'm around, I'm going to be judging you because I love it when somebody says, all right, I'm going to say this, but I don't want anybody to judge me. I'm like, oh, I just judged you like 10 times just by you saying that, so please. But I love that, and then I listen, and I'm like, I was right. I was right to judge them. Now, and then the reason I'm a firm believer in judging people is when I showed up, I didn't want anybody to judge me. I wanted you to co-sign my BS. That's what I wanted. I did not want anybody to say what I was doing was wrong. And what I found over the years is I need people to tell me that. I need people to tell me, hey, what you're doing is kind of offensive. It's bad. And when I don't get that type of feedback, I just go. I let loose. I'll talk about how I don't as much anymore, but that's my natural inclination. So when I hear other people, I had a sponsor one years ago. He's like, hey, I've got this plan. I'm quitting my job. I'm going to start selling marijuana, and which is totally an outside issue. I get it for you purists. But what I told him was, that sounds like a horrific idea. If you're going to stay sober, you doing that, bad idea. He's like, well, you're judging me. I'm like, yes, somebody has to. And he did. And then he went out. It went poorly. And he was sleeping. He was breaking into the Concord Fellowship and sleeping on the benches in there. And I'm like, bad idea? He's like, yeah, bad idea. So, you know, judging, it's good. Trust me. Okay, and I'll get a little bit more into that. Okay. All right, so 10 years old. My parents had a keg party. I come from a normal, dysfunctional family. A lot of yelling, a lot of screaming, a lot of drinking going on all the time. And my parents, they had a keg party. If you know, people who come from keg party families, they understand. And I wanted to see what all the action was about. So me and my buddy, we put our mouths under the tap and we started drinking as fast as we possibly could. I didn't like the taste of beer, but I loved the effect. I was not some skinny little 10-year-old. I was bigger, stronger, really good looking, and very, very funny. And I knew this is what I want to do. And I'd love to say that I started drinking on a daily basis from that point on, but I'd be lying. And so if you're new, it's a good rule of thumb if you're talking in front of a group of people to tell the truth. Because it's so much easier to keep the story straight when you're not lying. I still got some good ones, don't get me wrong. I used to tell my friends that I was a double Dutch champion. And for those of you not familiar with double Dutch, it's jumping, it's two people jumping rope. And it's a good one to talk about when you're drinking because nobody's going to challenge you on that. They're going to say, do this. Like, well, I'm kind of drunk right now. I can't do that while I'm drinking. Get me when I'm sober. And we'll have this. So I had this elaborate story about that. And in my mind, and this is a normal alcoholic mind, I believed everybody believed me. Now, I don't know about you and your physical abilities, but mine do not go along with the double Dutch lines. And anybody who was friends with me kind of knew that. And but they'd nod and smile because I wouldn't stop talking unless they did. So that's just the very nature of it. Now, I didn't start drinking on a daily basis until I moved out to California when I was nearly 15 years old. I get out here to California, and I was bald. I had shaved my head for a swim meet. So back then, swimmers, that's what we would do. I was a swimmer growing up, and I would shave my head for big swim meets. I always had this feeling that I was isolated and alone. And I get out here to California, and people told me I looked different. They didn't want anything to do with me. And then I sat and I ate lunch with the kids who couldn't leave campus at lunch. And so having this feeling that I was that I felt different, I was like, gosh, here I am. I felt like I was doing things. I was athletic. But I was looking at a picture of me at a swim meet. I'm throwing up the number one. But I was on the swim team of one. So growing up in West Texas, it's predominantly a football area. Swimming was kind of on the outs. Although they've got this multi-gazillion dollar pool built in this really small town now. But it was not the popular sport. And so here I was. I felt some, and sometimes it's that easy. If you're feeling isolated and alone, it might be that you're just isolated and alone. So just keep it simple. You know, if you're having these feelings, there's some validity to them. Let it be. And so I had these feelings before, and I get out here to California, and they're right there crashing down on me. I'm like, what am I going to do? I did the only natural thing. I went home, and I stole my parents' booze. And I started drinking in the garage across the street from the park on a daily basis. And alcohol did for me what I couldn't do for myself. It helped me fit in, helped me blend in. I wasn't just some strange guy sitting on campus. I became quite popular, and I went from sitting alone to becoming the student body president, and then I was, of course, the first student body president ever kicked out of office at Benicia High School. So we have our claims to fame around here. We rise to great heights. We sort of sink to great depths, and that's what we do. And you might be like, well, I'm new. I don't have any great stories like that. You might. And the state of California helps out with many of us on keeping score on how well we do on our stories with, like, blood alcohol content stories. I was a 0.35 myself. Thank you. And that is an honorable score in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, if you're new, and don't get me wrong, there's always somebody out there who's going to be, yeah, the 0.35, that's pretty nice. That's what I was this morning. And they're like, I got this buddy. He was a 0.6. He loves to bring this up just to rub my face in it. Anytime I'm talking, he's like, yeah, he was legally dead twice on the table. Twice, yeah, not just once. He died twice. And I have to hear about this every single time. It's like, hey, what's up? Two times. Yeah, that's what a 0.6 will get you. You get serious bragging rights. Now, this is really important if you're new, so you should probably write this one down. If you are outside of AA, talking to your family, friends, any other colleagues, anywhere else, bragging about your DUI score, not good. They do not think it is nearly as entertaining as we do around here, so please use caution. In fact, most of the stories that we tell around here, nobody really needs to hear, because they're going to be like, oh my God. You were like, that's like really bad. I'm like, were you okay? No, I was fine. I was driving. But it's when I stood up. That's when the problems happened. So, you know, we're all good until then. But you explain that to somebody else, you just have to keep explaining it. So they just don't get it. So let me save you the trouble. Just don't tell them those stories. You'll be so much better off for it. And so if you're like, yeah, this was really good, save it for us. Get a sponsor. They love to hear these stories. So that's really a great time. Now, so drinking on a daily basis, even in high school, it was I was getting into a lot of trouble. In fact, I received my first 12-step call when I was 17 years old. Now, if you haven't received the 12-step call, you might have gotten here a little bit too early, because that is pretty darn cool. These guys show up. It's like an aberration. And they start talking to you, and they start talking about their drinking and the stuff they were doing, their stories. And I'm like, man, these guys are cool. This is awesome. And next thing you know, you're in a meeting. Now, if you show up to your first meeting sober, again, you got here too early. But I show up to this meeting. It was at the Adobe House back when there was an Adobe House here, which was a men's recovery home here in Benicia. And so I'm there, and it was awesome. People are just saying all kinds of cool stuff. You could smoke in meetings back then. Now, smoking in meetings is really awesome. And I'm making kind of a big push to bring it back, because it was really cool. It adds some ambiance. Yeah, there's some smell factors with it, and I understand I got asthma. It's maybe not the best, but it's really cool for how it looks in these meetings. It's like a cloud. It's a mysterious cloud, too. And it's people are talking. You get a speaker who comes up, and they're just kind of like floating. And so I highly recommend it. So if you're, I think there's an intergroup meeting that, or a central office meeting coming up here soon. So I put it on the agenda. But I didn't stick around AA after that 12-step call. Like many of us don't. It's just a reality that we need a little shot of AA, but not too much. And I remember I sat outside of meetings drinking and not going in. And after high school, I went to the military. Now, there's some guys, they were looking for a few good men. Me being one such, I went and joined the Marine Corps. And the Marine Corps was neat, because there were guys there who drank like I drank. They fought like I thought I fought, and they shot guns. Now, if you haven't shot a machine gun while you're liquored up, you, again, might have got here a little bit too early. And I always hate to tell people that, because there's a lot of yets out there. But that's one you really should try. It's really cool. You can do it sober. It's just not the same. Now, the military was just like I thought it was. These guys were partying hard. Like 5 in the morning, they're drinking and then running, which is a horrible combination. And then fighting and shooting guns. And it was cool. It was cool until it wasn't. And it was cool until I became the lower companion. Now, I don't know about you, if you've become a lower companion. It's not good. People don't praise the lower companions like they should. And, that happens. I get it. But I was getting into trouble and more trouble. I got in trouble overseas. They call that an international incident. I'm doing air quotes if we're listening on tape. And international incidents are, you're just partying a little too hard. And they just don't... Other cultures just don't understand you, is that's how I justified it to my family. And it was bad, but my buddy ended up in a Singapore jail for a while, and then it went downhill from there. And so, but that was me. That was me partying in the military. And then I went after in that first deployment, we went over to Somalia. And going to a foreign country is interesting. That when you're dried out and doing stuff. And what's neat about that, and since I have a little time, I always like to talk about that. I've been able to deal with other issues since I've gotten here to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I didn't deal with them right away, but I have dealt with them. PTSD being one of them. Because when you go into a combat zone and things happen, it kind of messes up your head. Now, being me, I didn't seek any help for it for quite a while, and I'll get back to that in a bit. But that's the neat stuff around here that happens, and it gives me further reason to act out and do whatever I wanted to do. So things kept going worse and worse while I was in the military, and I was getting in a lot of trouble. They'd pull me off the gun line, say, "Why are you? Are you really drunk? Shooting a machine gun right now?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm partying, man," and they'd say, "Oh, that's, yeah, that's not good." I'm like, "Oh, I thought it was." And then, yeah, that's the problem. You think these things. It's, nobody is saying you should do that. And so I was getting in trouble, and I was, again, feeling isolated and alone. I had these feelings before. I had feelings of suicidal ideation, and I had had those before, but it was coming back pretty strong at this time, and I had access to weapons and live ammunition. I'm like, this is a recipe for disaster. And I'm like, I'm going to try to get sober. And so I had gotten sober several times. I had always tried to quit because I got in a lot of trouble. But this time I'm going to make a concerted effort and see what I can do here. And so February 10th, 1994, after a nasty fandango in Panama, I came back and I went into a rehabilitation center. And I'd love to be one of those guys who said, I have not thought about having a drink since. But that's a lie. I'm like, anybody who says that, I don't believe you. So just, I'm judging. But for me, there are going to be reasons in life where you're going to think a drink is probably a good idea right now. Now, the good thing, though, is one of my favorite sayings up on the wall that I saw early in my sobriety was think, think, think. I'm like, well, that seems stupid. Because everything seems stupid when I was sober. I didn't want to be here. My first thought is usually wrong. It's just a horrible idea. Second thought, a little bit better. But my third thought, I can usually act on it. So I love the think, think, think now. Then, no. Because here I was. I was 20 years old when I got sober. 1994, 20 years old, in Southern California, just fresh out of rehab, going to meetings in Southern California. In Southern California, they're mean in meetings. They told me, these guys, they're like, hey, I've spilled more booze on my tie than you'd ever drank in your life. You're going to get drunk after the meeting, maybe during the meeting at the rate you're going. You're allowed to talk at two meetings, the meeting before the meeting after the meeting, but the meeting during the meeting after the meeting, nothing redeemable we want to get, or you have to say. I'm like, oh my God. And I remember I'd stare at these guys. I'm like, all right, old man, I'm going to kick out the cane, I'm going to sweep that knee, and I'm going to get you on the way down. See, I was wiry, I was strong, and I was weighing about 140 pounds at the time, and because I was on the fast track to nowhere before I got here. And by fast track to nowhere, I absolutely mean that I was abusing methamphetamines. Now, if you haven't tried meth, I'm going to highly recommend it. It'll pick you up. It'll get you down to a better bottom than you ever thought possible. When I get home tonight, my wife is going to say, you didn't tell him that meth thing again, did you? I'm like, yeah, I did. She's like, she hates it. And she's been around me forever. And she's like, yeah, why do you say that? And I get this other sponsor. He's like, you can't tell people that. I'm like, oh, gosh, don't tell me I can't because I just did. Oops. It is tongue-in-cheek. I would recommend that you not use meth tonight. But do try it. So, I can't stop, I tell you. So I'm here and I'm just angry at these guys, and they wiggle their coffee cups and say, keep coming back. And I'm like, and so I did. I kept showing up to the same meetings over and over again just to get these guys, just to get their goats. And they'd be like, hey, wow, are you still sober? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, we doubt it. And like, that is just, it's not nice, the things that they were saying to me, but I kept showing up. My sponsor tells me that they gave me my first resentment. They gave me a reason to come around Alcoholics Anonymous. And up here in Northern California, we give hugs. And we get cups of coffee for people, tell them to keep coming back. And so it's a different vibe down there. In fact, I was just down there a couple weeks ago visiting my sponsor. He lives in Los Angeles. He is exact same way. He has not changed. And that's, I love that about him, that he refuses to change. And in his meeting there, they're kind of mean to people still. I'm like, oh, gosh. And he let me speak, and I mentioned that. And they said I don't have to speak as much anymore. But which was not very nice. So I'm going to these meetings, and I'm miserable. But I'm staying sober. I'm sticking around. I'm showing up, and I'm showing up. I get out of the military. I'm a year and a half sober when I get out of the military. And I move back up here to Northern California. I was stationed at Camp Pendleton. So I move back up here to Northern California. My dad is living in Glen Cove, so I started living there with him. And I'm going to meetings in Benicia and Vallejo. And that's where the Wednesday night meeting became my home group. I met just a tremendous amount of great people. If you're new, get a home group. Get a place where you're going to show up again and again and again, because that's where the action happens, is when people know you. It's easy to walk away when you don't know anybody, but when you know people, it's much tougher to leave, much nicer to stick around. We want you to stick around. And so that's what I would do. I would show up, and that's where I got my first commitments. They let me I think I was the coffee maker, and then they forced me into being the general service representative, as I talked about. Now, general service, that's a neat one. And if you're new, it's one of these things where you're going to hear people say, oh gosh, so boring. And if you think about life, it is kind of boring. Life is just boring. But general service is exciting, because that's how the baton of AA is passed between the home group or the group and AA as a whole. So your voice matters when you're doing these things. So I stuck around in general service for about 15 years, and I did a lot of commitments there, until my wife was like, hey, you're gone a lot. Are you gonna like be part of this family? I'm like, I suppose. And so she said that when our youngest graduates high school, you can jump back in. And he's a senior this year. And but I'll get to that in a bit as well. But and that's the neat stuff about this, is sticking around, showing up, and doing stuff. Now, so I started going to these meetings, started showing up, and I've got sobriety of the why not variety. And what I mean by that is the guys in my home group, they'd say, hey, why don't you pick up the chairs? I'm like, why would I pick up the chairs? Like, why not? Okay, yeah, I guess so. And so I would do that. And then they'd say things like, hey, why don't you empty the ashtrays? Ashtrays? I only smoked like half a pack of cigarettes during this meeting. Why would I do that? I'm like, well, why not? I'm like, okay, yeah, sure. And so I started doing these things again and again because why not? So I'm at a coffee shop downtown, and I'm sitting there. I'm feeling sorry for myself and just miserable. And in fact, I was at a spot where I was suicidal in sobriety. Now, if you haven't been suicidal in sobriety, just wait. It's coming. Be patient with it. And again, I would recommend that you don't kill yourself, because I found at a meeting I had to say that because a guy came up. He was really angry. He's like, why would you tell people they're going to be suicidal? This is a very serious thing. And sobriety is a serious thing. I'm like, totally get it. And the lady who came up after him, she's like, oh, that guy's an effing asshole. My son killed himself 6 months ago. I would have loved to hear somebody say something like that to him before he did it. It might have changed things. And so it's a balance here. And what I found, too, is there's a very fine line between people who are angry at what you say and whether or not they want you to sponsor them. And I haven't figured this one out, but I have ended up sponsoring a lot of guys who I thought, oh, this guy hates my guts. And I'm like, oh, he's coming back. And I'm like, oh, yeah, now I'm ready for it. I know what's going to happen. I'm like, yeah, I'll sponsor you. And sometimes it's nice to tell people that you'll sponsor them through that moment if they're very angry at you. And it's like, hey, I see you're angry. I will sponsor you through this moment in this conversation. And that just brings them joy. They usually walk away just overjoyed. Well, that's how it looks to me. They might say differently, but I just really get that feeling that they're overjoyed. But that's the neat part about this. So I'm feeling suicidal, sitting at this coffee shop. This guy comes up to me, asks me how I'm doing. I said, I'm doing great. He's like, really wants to tell it to your face. And he sits down, starts critiquing my sobriety. He asks me this. He's like, do you have a big book? I'm like, oh, yeah, I've got a big book. It doesn't have a big book. Of course, I read it when I need to get to sleep. It kind of bores me. He's like, oh, that's interesting. That's where we hide the secret to sobriety. I'm like, oh, gosh, he's one of these guys. And then he asked me if I've ever worked the steps. I'm like, absolutely. First meeting I ever went to, did them right off the wall. Did nothing for me. I'm like, okay, all right, I got this. And then he's like, okay, do you have a sponsor? I'm like, had this one nailed. I'm like, I'm doing this self-sponsorship thing right now. I'm like, oh, okay, all right, I think I see the problem. Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to be your sponsor. I'm like, whoa, fireball, moving a little fast here. Shouldn't there be some, like, courting coffee? Maybe a kiss on the cheek? There's got to be something a little bit more involved. It's like, it's fine, it's fine. I'm only going to be your temporary sponsor until I become your regular sponsor. I'm like, oh, yeah. Now, here's the joy of it. I've been sitting around these rooms for a year and a half. I knew what I needed to do. You hear stuff. If you're not doing anything in AA, you're going to hear people talk about working the steps, having a sponsor, reading books, having these spiritual awakenings and all this stuff. And if you're not doing that, you're like, oh, it's just kind of cringy. And now this guy did for me what I wasn't able to do for myself. He put himself in that position, and he was willing to help me out. And that's exactly what we did. I grabbed my big book. We went back to his place that morning, and we started going through. And he said, we're going to have you underline and highlight stuff. I'm like, no, I can remember this. He's like, yeah. We're going to have you underline and highlight stuff, which he wasn't really believing in my abilities, which was hurtful. But I grabbed it, and he explained that I was going to be passing this stuff on to somebody else, and he didn't want me to screw it up. I'm like, okay, I can deal with that. And that's what we did. So we were going through. By the end of the day, we're on the third step. He has me get down on my knees, and we start to, I'm like, hey, you know, I got issues with God. And he's like, really? Yeah, I am God. I'm like, oh, good gosh. Yeah, you do. And I'm like, can I borrow your higher power till I get one of my own? He's like, oh, absolutely not. I was talking to my God earlier, and my God hates you. And so that's not a nice thing to say. But so what he was explaining, though, afterwards is that he's like, here's what you got to do. We are going to go through the steps. And through doing that, you are going to get a conception of a higher power that's going to work for you. Because my God's going to fail you. I'm going to fail you. AA is going to fail you. The only thing that's going to work around here is you. And the only way you're going to get to this point is by you doing these steps. And he was absolutely correct. And that was the best thing that anybody ever said to me around here. It's like, you're going to be okay so long as you do this stuff. I'm like, I'm ready. And I always love it that they say, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And that's what this guy did. And I like to say that stuff because it sounds kind of profound and stuff, but I stole it from somebody else. So, but you can use it too. And it was, but it was absolutely true, because here's what we did. We started going through this stuff. So we did that third step. He had me starting on my fourth step. Next week, we're doing the fifth step. We're talking about defects of character. Then I'm wanting their removal after that, and I'm asking for their removal. But that stuff, the steps are a package deal. It's not all going to just come at once. If I was waiting on step three, I'd be waiting forever. So it was when I started making amends. That's when it happened. That's when I had this spiritual awakening. I felt different. I knew different. And the neat thing about it, and I'll tell you a little bit about it. I've got a little bit of time. So my spiritual awakening was really neat because I had made an amends. I'm like, well, this feels different. And I was driving my car. It was a 1972 Datsun 240Z, beautiful automobile. And I was smoking because, as I mentioned, smoking is a good portion of my story here. And I was getting ready to flick my cigarette butt out the window. I had options. I could have put it in my pristine ashtray, or I could have dropped it through the rusted out floorboard, but I was opting for door number three and throwing it out the window. Now, as I was getting ready to flick it out the window, I suddenly had this profound thought that somebody's going to have to pick this up. I am making somebody's life a little bit more difficult right now. Why don't I not do that? Now, I know what you're saying. You probably want to start smoking, but what happened to me, I had never thought about that. I never thought about making people's lives easier or if it was making their lives more difficult. That was never on my mind. My mind was always centered on me and doing what was best for me. And so having this thought, I put it out in the ashtray just because I forgot one time I was talking to me. And they're like, what did you do? Cliffhanger. And I put it out in there. But that it did something for me. Again, I felt different, I knew different, and I had this conception of a higher power. The conception that I have, and I absolutely love, is it's not me. I figure when I'm able to define my higher power, it's going to fail me. So I've always kept it just nice and open that I'm not it, but there's something out there that I don't need to be able to describe. I don't need to be able to talk about it. It's fine. And that's the great joy of it, and it's been working for me for quite a while now. When I started doing the 10th step, I started looking at my defects of character. And I affectionately refer to the 10th step as the shut the hell up step, because I get out of so much trouble by keeping my mouth shut. And now if you're new, you're like, well, I'm not on the 10th step. Oh, no, you can try it. Shut the hell up. And you will notice a vast improvement in your relationships if you do not say what you think you need to say. It is a game changer. You give it a shot. You'll be like, wow, this stuff really works. I had something I needed to tell him, and it, no. And I love it because I spend a lot of time not talking. And I think it was an episode of a cartoon. This guy says that you have two ears and one mouth for a reason. And it is absolutely true that I need to listen more than I need to talk. And when I do, good things happen. Conversations end. I don't get in arguments. It's delightful. It's really great for the relationship. So if you're in a relationship, you gotta try this one. Now, I love the prayer and meditation. My sponsor is like, I'm like, well, what can I do there? He's like, well, you can pray, you can meditate, but here's what you should do. You should go to the library and look up this stuff. And he was right. When I started doing that, I found all sorts of spiritual literature out there. And I'm like, oh, I like this. It wasn't somebody telling me, hey, do this. It was me exploring it and finding great ways to stay sober and great ways to meditate. I'm a big fan of waking meditation, washing dishes, meditating, just focusing on the task at hand. And I'm a big fan of prayer. I get down on my knees in the morning and I get down on my knees at night. I've been doing that for a couple decades now, and it's been fine. Now, it hasn't hurt me. Now, when I was new, if you told me, hey, take one of these, chances are your hair's going to burst into flames, your eyeballs are going to pop out of your head, you might lose an appendage or two. I'm like, yeah, give me like 15 or 20. But I get here to AA, and you guys are like, hey, you should try some prayer and meditation. It's going to make you feel good. I'm like, oh, back up, hippie sticks. I am not here to feel good. I'm here for misery part two. And so when I put it in context like that, it seems to make a little bit more sense. Now, the mainstay of my recovery, and I mentioned it earlier, is working with other drunks. I get more out of it than anything else. Service, they say, it'll keep you sober. And I'm a believer, digging in and hanging out is what's going to help you more than anything else there. And so I've sponsored a ton of guys over the years. My statistics are phenomenal. I've stayed sober through every single one. Now, I have had guys get drunk. I've had guys end up in jail. I've had guys die. And so if I'm going to take credit for the good ones, I got to take credit for the bad, so I'll just take credit for me. And so I will survive all of this. And that's the joy of this, just getting in those relationships and hanging out, taking guys through the steps, just like my sponsor took me through. Now, I met my wife in the program. It was a standard boy meets girl on AA campus. Boy stalks girl till she caves in for a second date. Now, this is back when stalking was romantic and not criminal like it is today. So I just got to be clear on that. We have three kids, and we know what causes that. So we just don't do that anymore. And it's really kind of changed things. Yeah, so, you should really write that one down. But my kids are awesome. Now, so when my home group, they told me those things, like, you do this. And like, they said, go to college. You need to do something. I'm like, why would I go to college? They're like, well, why not? I'm like, huh, all right, yeah, okay. So I started going to college, and I went till I couldn't go anymore. I became an attorney. And I say that because I'm in the front of the room and not in any way to solicit any legal business from you people, because I know you people. I know your legal problems and I want nothing to do with them. I say it merely to brag. And now when I was going to school, I was working as a magician. Now, I don't know about you and childhood dreams. That wasn't even on my list, but I ended up paying my rent, doing magic tricks all throughout the Bay Area. And it was awesome, and I still dabble in stuff. I'm not trying to solicit anything right here because I don't really have much time these days. The amount of activity that I do is just, it's kind of incredible. I've been really active in all sorts of volunteer activities outside of Alcoholics Anonymous because I find that giving of my time, it's the greatest commodity that we've got. And so I'm a huge proponent of doing that, and I get just a ton out of it. So if you're out there not doing stuff, do stuff in your group, then take it out to the community. Learn how to be a decent human being, and then you'll be a decent human being everywhere. Now, this doesn't mean I'm not fallible and I'm not going to have problems, but it does mean that I am out there trying. Do the best you can on a daily basis, and things will be okay. Now, my kids, they're older now. As I mentioned, my youngest, he's 18. He's a senior in high school, which means I'm available to start general service at the end of his school year. But we'll see what happens there. Now, my middle kid, he's kind of awesome. He goes to UC Santa Cruz, and he has always had a different attitude. When we would go out places, he would go out and he'd say, "This was the greatest day ever." I'm like, "What are you talking about, kid?" And he's like, "Yeah, it was the greatest day ever." I'm like, we went to the park. And he's like, "Yeah, we sure did." And I'm like, "Oh, okay, all right. And each time, it's like, "Oh, this was the best. This is the greatest day ever. You played in the backyard." He's like, "Yeah, I did. Did you see that?" I'm like, "Oh, yeah." Now, what he did, and I picked up on, is he enjoyed the moment. He's not worried about the future. He's not worried about the past. Not worried about the mortgage. He's just worried about, am I having a good time right now? Yeah, things are good. Things are good enough. This is a great moment. You might want a better moment, but this is a great moment. And I'm like, okay. So I try to harness that every day. And I've been talking about this now for probably about 18 years since he started that when he was about two. And I just absolutely love it because he's right that each moment is the greatest moment that we got. Each day is the greatest day that we got. You might not like what's happening, but it's still the greatest one you got. So you should enjoy it. Now, and that'll be my closing message to you. I would like you all to go out and finish this day and have the greatest day ever. Now, you might be thinking, why on earth would I do that? And the answer is simple. If you were paying attention to taking notes like I said, why not? And with that, thank you again for inviting me, Greg. Appreciate it. And thank you, Benicia. Thank you, Keith. Oh, my gosh. Get in here, baby. Yeah.